Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. We design, craft and install beautiful kitchens. cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
There's a lot of misinformation online and on social media when it comes to cholesterol and how it can affect your heart health. And here to tell us more about the facts and how cholesterol can be a risk factor when it comes to heart disease, I'm joined by Dr. Paddy Barrett, who's a preventative cardiologist at the Blackrock Clinic. I'm just looking at all the questions coming in, Paddy, which we will have to get to. But let's talk a little bit about this first, because you've been bothered by what you're seeing online about cholesterol, heart disease, how it relates to heart health. Why?
So because it's putting people at risk of the most common condition that's most likely to kill them. And that is where I see it. This was somewhat of a fringe issue many, many years ago, but I see it very much increasingly in my clinical practice with patients coming to me with very often misinformed information around what causes heart disease and how then we can go at preventing it and also prohibiting them going on appropriate treatments to actually reduce their risk.
So what, they think that cholesterol is not a factor?
Correct. And so the thing that I try and explain is that if you're looking at the core definition of what we talk about as heart disease or plaque in your coronary arteries, the definition is the retention of a cholesterol particle in the artery wall. So without cholesterol, there is no heart disease that we call coronary artery disease. You can have high blood pressure, smoking, diabetes, but in the absence of the cholesterol particle, you don't get heart disease. And so because of this, there has been a reluctance to see it, A, as a risk factor for heart disease in terms of the misinformation that often people get online to say that their doctors are lying to them or the establishment is lying to them. And they will routinely go around with very, very high cholesterol levels and be reluctant to reduce those cholesterol levels appropriately with medications and therefore increasing their risk.
Mm-hmm. How does the cholesterol get in there in the first place?
So cholesterol is transported across the artery wall. So there are trillions of cholesterol particles going through your bloodstream, going in and out of your artery wall all of the time. But sometimes some of them get trapped in there and an inflammation process kicks off. And that is what leaves the residual deposit of cholesterol. The analogy that I use with my patients is that if you imagine throwing a tennis ball at a glass window, when that tennis ball crosses over the glass and gets stuck the far side, that is when the cholesterol is retained in the artery wall. If you have high blood pressure, you're just throwing that tennis ball harder. If you have high blood pressure, you're throwing the tennis ball very hard at the glass. If you are a smoker, you've walked up to the glass, hit it with a hammer, and all the balls actually sail through. So it's the combination of both the number of particles that hit your artery wall, the cholesterol number, and the other risk factors that you have, high blood pressure, smoking, diabetes, etc. And so it's that combinational process that ultimately drives your risk of plaque in the wall, ultimately leading to heart disease and heart attack risk.
So those risk factors that you've mentioned there, they're making the cholesterol sticky. I'm using layman's language
here. Yeah, and so we'll use sticky as more likely to cross over and get stuck. Mm-hmm. And that is the key factor, because the issue is that, say, for example, you have someone who has a low cholesterol most of their life and then later in life develop high cholesterol and have no other risk factors. Their risk of heart disease is actually quite low over a short time period. But if you have someone who has moderately elevated cholesterol, but they also have high blood pressure and are a smoker, they are way more likely to develop coronary artery disease early in life. And this is why it's a combination of factors, not just one. And also it's about time course. So it's about how many risk factors you have for how long. And we always look at managing all risk factors rather than just one risk factor.
Mm-hmm. So if I have high blood pressure and I decide, I'm going to tackle this, I'm going to go running every day, I'm going to have a plant-based diet, and, you know, nothing with any sugar or excessive or bad fats going to cross my lips. Can I fix it?
So it depends what you're trying to fix. So blood pressure is much more amenable to lifestyle interventions in terms of exercise and nutrition. So we can actually push your blood pressure around quite a lot with lifestyle. Cholesterol is different. Cholesterol is as much more of a limited response to lifestyle interventions. So if you look at the big levers that we pull in terms of reducing saturated fat, increasing soluble fiber, and reducing weight if we actually need to, you're talking maybe a 15% reduction in LDL cholesterol. And while that is directionally helpful, it is rarely sufficient in isolation to actually get someone to target if they have high cholesterol. And this is the difference between managing a population and a person. If you're the Minister for Health, if you can get a 15% reduction across the population, that will result in a significant reduction in the total number of heart attacks. So that's a major win for a population and if you're a Minister for Health. But if you're an individual looking to maximally reduce your risk, that 15% reduction is unlikely to be sufficient for you. So when it comes to cholesterol, lifestyle often helps, but is rarely sufficient.
So you need what else?
So potentially this is when we get to the question of medications.
Yeah.
And so the answer here in terms of how to decide about going on a medication is about ultimately understanding your risk of heart disease rather than just the number of cholesterol. And this is where the other factors come in. So when we actually look at defining risk, we often use calculators for 10-year risk. But this is a challenging point because if you're considering 10-year risk, you have to consider the rest of your life. So ultimately, you actually need to use a different risk calculation model that ultimately evaluates A, whether you actually have heart disease already and therefore your risk is quite high, and what is the risk over the rest of your life? And so this is about identifying what is called lifetime cardiovascular risk. These calculators are freely available online and can be used by any physician. But if your near-term risk is low, we'll say it's a 2% risk of an event like a heart attack over the next 10 years, and you go on a cholesterol-lowering medication, that only reduces your risk of an event by, say, 25%. But that's 25% of 2%. So your risk goes from 2% to 1.5%. And this is where people will say, well, then, you see, lowering cholesterol doesn't actually make a difference. That's minuscule. It's a tiny amount. That's over 5 years. I'm not interested in 5-year risk. I'm interested in 50-year risk. And if you're talking to a 30 or 40-year-old individual and we want to actually defer heart disease risk over the next 50 years, the bigger that 25% or 30% risk reduction when they get much older is much bigger in absolute terms. So the risk may go from, say, 50% down to 25%.
And what is it in your experience that leaves people resistant to cholesterol lowering medication?
So again, this is where we move into the online space of misinformation. There really has been over the last several years a platform for people to become, I think, contrarian about any medical science-based information. And cholesterol is an incredibly common topic for discussion. So it is, you know, popular that people will see it as not an issue or push back and say that your doctor is lying to you and the cholesterol doesn't cause heart disease. It also hasn't helped that if you look at the literature, like I've said, in terms of if I say cholesterol prevents heart attacks, and then you actually look at a study that is only done over 3 to 5 years, and you say, well, it's only really reduced the risk by 0.5%. That doesn't sound very appealing. But we have to present that information to people and say, listen, this is over this time horizon. And if that seems like a good bet for you, go ahead and take it. But if it doesn't seem like a good bet for you, then you don't have to take it. So our job as doctors is ultimately to define, here is your risk over this time frame, and do you want to take that bet? But if, for example, we were to take an individual who had moderately elevated cholesterol and did a CT scan of their heart, and you could see that they had plaque already in their coronary arteries, say at 50 years of age, their risk is much higher over the next 5 to 10 years and extremely high over the next 50. So their bet for them in terms of going on the cholesterol-lowering medication is much higher. So your job is really not just about understanding your cholesterol. It is about understanding your cardiovascular risk over the next 5 to 10 years and over the next 50.
Okay, and look at the question I come to first. How do I lower my cholesterol without tablets? I'm 53, female. It's gone up over the past year to 5.6 with an LDL of 3.6. I exercise regularly. I'm not overweight. What more can I do to lower it and get it down naturally?
So what I would say is that when you take, particularly around middle-aged females going through the menopause period, you see an increase in cholesterol. That happens about 10 years earlier in males. So that is something that we see naturally happening. And about 60% of the variance of your cholesterol is genetically determined. So yes, there are things we can do to lower it that I've already mentioned. But the question is have you gotten down to your appropriate target for you? Now, for some people, they will make those changes and it will work wonderfully. They will get to target. Fantastic. Job done. But for a lot of people, it won't hit that target. And then the question is taking the additional amount off with the medication, is it worth it?
What do you think of those numbers that listener has sent in to us?
So again, it all depends on
5.6, just to remind our listeners, and an LDL of 3.6.
So they're fairly average numbers in terms of they're not particularly high.
Yeah.
I mean, they're not ideal, but they're not extremely high. And they're what you would expect in someone in that age category. But it depends on their other risk factors.
Is low blood pressure a risk factor in heart disease?
Generally not. Generally, we speak more about high blood pressure. So often you'll see younger females will have lower blood pressure, but lower blood pressure really is defined by the symptoms that someone has. So if you're a 25-year-old female and you have a top number of blood pressure of 90 and a bottom number of blood pressure of 50 and you feel totally fine, you have normal blood pressure, not low blood pressure.
Okay, it's interesting. The best foods to help reduce cholesterol?
So again, the biggest lever that you will pull will be around reducing saturated fat. So that's usually around kind of reducing things like butter and certain cuts of meat, and also increasing soluble fiber. So that's around more so about increasing, say, vegetable intake. So roughly a Mediterranean style diet.
Okay. I'm trying to avoid taking a statin. Cholesterol was 7.4. Now it's 6.5. This listener has lost 4 stone in weight through diet and exercise to help reduce cholesterol. Does the weight loss slow the reduction of cholesterol? And may I ask if the cholesterol HDL ratio makes a difference?
So I suppose two questions there. Number one, weight loss does actually help with reducing cholesterol, but it often begins to plateau out. So it will take the very high levels down a modest degree. And then in terms of HDL, HDL is often seen as good cholesterol, but we have to be honest about that in terms of how we integrate it into our risk models. Mm-hmm. And so having a higher HDL is typically a degree of protection in terms of how we evaluate overall cardiovascular risk. But again, I have patients with very high cholesterol, very high HDL cholesterol levels, and have lots and lots of heart disease as well.
Okay, Alan's father died of a heart attack 15 years ago at the age of 61. He's now 44 and constantly worried about my own heart health. My cholesterol is good and he has yearly bloods done, but it doesn't give me solace. Is there a scan or a test that he can do on a yearly or a biannual basis to settle his fears around this?
So this is the fundamental question that people are trying to answer. They're not concerned, do they have a risk factor? What they're concerned about is, do they have heart disease? And so that's a different test. And that is answered traditionally by doing a cardiac CT scan of the heart, either a CT calcium score or a CT coronary angiogram, to ultimately identify, do I or do I not have heart disease? Because in simple terms, you can't die from a condition that you don't have. So you may have lots of risk factors, but if those risk factors have not translated into plaque in the coronary arteries, your near-term risk of an event like a heart attack is actually quite low. What I would say is, so a CT scan is the question, is the test that will answer that question for him. The caveat here is that, particularly if you're a younger individual, tread carefully here, because it may interfere with life insurance questions that you may have down the line.
You might not want to know the answers, but it sounds like it's bothering him enough.
Correct. And so that's a decision to be made with his doctor.
Okay. What's your opinion, says this listener, Joe, on the keto diet? High protein, red meat twice daily, eggs, cheese, low carb, and low saturated fats. In the context of a young 23-year-old athletic male, what effect does that have long term on the heart?
So there's a really interesting study that was done on this very question, looking at a group called the lean mass hyper responders. And this was a group of individuals who were typically fit and healthy. Everything was good in terms of blood pressure, normal, insulin sensitive. And when they went on a ketogenic diet, which is a high fat, very low carbohydrate diet, they got a significant increase in their cholesterol levels. When they did CT scans on those individuals, and you actually look at the data that was actually included, they had some of the highest rates of progression of heart disease that we've ever seen. Now, but that is in the individuals who had a very significant increase in their cholesterol levels. And about 30% of patients who use a ketogenic diet will get that significant bump, but a lot of patients don't. So the question is how does it impact your other biomarkers?
Well, how do you figure that one out?
Simple cholesterol test.
Right. So if your cholesterol is high, don't go on a ketogenic diet.
So you have to see how your cholesterol responds to the diet. So you need to see, is your cholesterol normal at the start?
Yeah.
Then go on the diet and then see what happens to your cholesterol.
And then come off it if the cholesterol goes up.
That would be my advice.
Okay. But in general terms, would you advocate a diet like that? Or would you prefer to see more of a plant-based?
I am not overly dogmatic about those approaches. I think you have to actually see how people respond. So if this is the only dietary strategy that works for that individual and they're tolerating it and their biomarkers are very much unchanged, I think it's okay to use. But in an individual who gets a very exaggerated response in their cholesterol, we have to tread very carefully.
Paddy, we could keep going, but we can't because we're running out of time. But thank you so much. It's always great to have you in. That's Dr. Paddy Barrett there, who's a preventative cardiologist. Now, and Paddy will be back with us, so keep the questions coming in and we'll save them up. Billy Kelleher, who has, as we know, would like to be Fianna Fáil's candidate for the Oras, has been speaking to Cork 96 FM's Paul Byrne this morning. And he has said, it didn't come as a shock that Taoiseach Micheál Martin endorsed Jim Gavin, while insisting that the move was not at all politically embarrassing to him. He said that he's never taken anything personally during the course of his political career. He says he's a very professional relationship with Micheál Martin going back many years. So that's Billy Kelleher who is speaking. And we know, as of this morning, that the choice will be made by the Fianna Fáil Parliamentary Party on Tuesday of next week. Nominations have to be in by Friday and then they'll vote in a secret ballot on Tuesday. Back after this break.
Text 51551 today with Clare Byrne on RTE Radio 1.